Okay, so today we are very happy to have Daniel Reinhardt from MIT. He got his PhD from Stanford, and also more importantly, he's from PSI program. So today he will tell us about coarse-grained entropy and microstates and so on. So please.
Great. Thanks, Benny, for having me remotely. So I'll be talking about, like it says, coarse-grained entropy, microstates, and the relation to the quantum marginal problem. So I'll start by introducing those concepts I just named. And after talking a little bit about macrostates and microstates and how we usually think about entropy, and then telling you about this famous quantum marginal problem and quantum information theory, I'll get into the main results, which is basically a theorem giving some inequalities. The upper bound in the theorem is something that was proven by Osborne in 2008. It's not that hard to prove, and I'll show you. It's a nice little proof. And then the main result is turning that inequality into an approximate equality. And that's what I'll be showing you today. And then after the proof sketches, I'll tell you about all the open problems in this regard. So let's start by just reminding ourselves about entropy in the classical setting. And there's lots of different ways of defining it, but generally we like to think that it increases and satisfies the second law of thermodynamics. So a natural question that people have asked for a long time is, what's the analog of such an entropy in quantum many-body systems? So the most naive thing you might try is you say, okay, take your system and just calculate the von Neumann entropy of the global state. But of course, if you have a closed system and it's evolving unitarily, then this entropy doesn't change. So the global von Neumann entropy is not a great candidate for an analog to think about the second law in quantum mechanics. Now, that of course is not a new observation. But to explain it, I think it's helpful to go back to an analogy even in classical physics. So in classical physics, you might try to define a state as a probability distribution on classical phase space. So I'm calling it rho like you would in quantum mechanics, but it's just some classical probability distribution. And you could then define the entropy as the entropy, the Shannon entropy of that probability distribution. But it turns out that that entropy doesn't change in time either. That's also constant. That's a consequence of Liouville's theorem in classical mechanics, which is just telling you that if you have some blob in phase space, then as it evolves, it doesn't actually change volume. So to get a clue to how to better define a notion of entropy that increases, we go to Mr. Boltzmann here. This is him with his formula on his tombstone. I photoshopped out the K to get a nice clean formula. So what he says is, for a microstate alpha, you define the coarse-grained entropy as the log of the number of other microstates that have the same coarse-grained properties. So for instance, the coarse-grained property in question might be total energy. And then to define the entropy of your configuration, you say, well, how many other microstates are there that have that same energy? And then you take the log. So this is the traditional story. And the lesson is that useful notions of entropy involve some sort of coarse graining. And also that this entropy counts the number of other microstates with those properties. And now we can ask, how can we define an analogous coarse-grained entropy in quantum mechanics? Now, there's actually a whole lot of different options, and people have thought about this question before. And as you might expect, it sort of depends on what problem you want to tackle. You know, there's no universal best analogy to make, in my opinion. It depends on what problem you're trying to solve and which quantities are going to be useful. And in this talk, I don't want to dwell on trying to form the best conceptual analogy, although that is an interesting question. Instead, I'm just going to take a particular quantity that people often use when studying many-body systems that has been called the coarse-grained entropy in the past, And I want to prove some remarkable properties about this coarse-grained entropy. So the quantity that I'm going to be studying is defined like this. You take your many-body system, and then you divide it up into a bunch of regions that I'm calling A1, A2, et cetera. And then we're going to define the coarse-grained entropy as simply the sum of the von Neumann entropies on each region. So it's a really simple formula. And I'll discuss some properties of this quantity. So actually, first I'll say, this type of quantity, where does it come from? It's one of the simple candidates that people have used before to try to talk about the entropy in a many-body system. And it comes up in literature in quantum thermodynamics, and it comes up in literature on holography. And there are more sophisticated choices, but this particularly simple one is the one that I'm going to prove some cool facts about. So, okay, what are the properties? Clearly, it depends on the partition that you choose of your lattice, but often it'll be insensitive to the exact choice of partition. And in the simple case that your state is a product state over all of the qubits, then this coarse-grained entropy will just be zero. On the other hand, you can also define this for mixed states, for a global mixed state. So let's say that the global state is some mixed thermal state, e to the minus beta h. So in that case, you can try to calculate this coarse-grained entropy. You just add up the entropy in all the regions. And you end up getting something that, up to sub-extensive corrections, looks like the thermal entropy of the global state. So it looks like the entropy of the global state in this case. Now, another example that is sort of like the motivating example for this quantity in general is, let's say you have a global state that's pure. So it's very much unlike the thermal state globally. On the other hand, let's say that it's in some many-body system that's been evolving for a long time, so this pure state actually looks thermal, which is to say that its reduced density matrix on any smaller region looks thermal. So in that case, if you calculate the coarse-grained entropy, you're going to get this approximately the same quantity as you would for the thermal state. So in that case, even though the global state is pure, the global von Neumann entropy is zero, you're going to get a so-called coarse-grained entropy that matches this nice thermal quantity that you're used to. By the way, if anyone has questions, hopefully you can just unmute and ask. If this example doesn't make sense, it would be a good time to ask. And finally, one of the nice properties of this coarse-grained entropy is that it tends to increase for some natural systems. So if you had a local Hamiltonian and you started in some product state, then over time, as entanglement builds up, this coarse-grained entropy would increase. And then at very late times, once the pure state had thermalized in the sense above, then the coarse-grained entropy would look like the thermal entropy that you might have predicted classically. Okay, so we've been talking about all these nice properties of this quantity that people have called the coarse-grained entropy. But on the last slide, I was talking about how entropies count microstates. At least that's our classical notion. So you might wonder, in this context, this sum of von Neumann entropies, what is it counting? Like, what are there some microstates that are being counted by this coarse-grained entropy? And so far, it's not immediately clear. But the purpose of my talk today is to give that microstate counting interpretation, and in particular, to derive a formula. So here's what I'm going to mean by microstates. Given our original state rho, we ask, what are all of the pure states phi that look like rho on the regions A, which is to say that the reduced density matrix of phi looks like the reduced density matrix of rho on these local regions A sub I. And whenever you have a state phi like that, I'll call it a microstate in the sense that it has the same, that it's another possible pure state of the system that has the same local properties as rho. And as a sort of physical interpretation, you might say that if you have your many-body system in the lab, and maybe you've kept it isolated, so maybe you know it's in some pure state, but if you can only observe rho locally, then for all you know, it could be in any one of these other microstates that all have the same local properties. And now what I'm going to show is that the coarse-grained entropy on the previous slide, which was just this sum of von Neumann entropies, is actually going to be counting microstates. It's going to be the log of the number of microstates, and I'll make that more precise. And as I make that more precise, I'll start by introducing it in the language of the so-called quantum marginal problem. So first of all, the word marginal might be unfamiliar to some of you. It just means reduced density matrix. So, oh, I see a raised hand actually.
Hi, so I wanted to ask, this coarse-grained entropy, does it bound the von Neumann entropy in any way, like upper bound or lower bounded? Can you say anything like that about it?
Sure, so it is a von Neumann entropy itself in the sense that it's a sum of all these different von Neumann right. entropies.
But like in terms of the von Neumann entropy of the global state.
Exactly. So that's exactly. So the coarse-grained entropy is always going to be larger than the global entropy.
Okay.
And that's a property of entropy called subadditivity.
All right.
Great question. I was introducing the word marginal. So in classical probability, you talk about the marginal probability distribution. So sometimes in quantum mechanics, you call the reduced density matrix the marginal. So anyway, we have this quantum marginal problem that goes like this. You say, given a list of marginals, rho ai, is there a global state that's consistent with those marginals? Because you know sometimes there will be, sometimes there won't be, depending on what the marginals you list are. And any time that there is a global state that's compatible at all with those marginals, by compatible, I mean it has the same reduced density matrices as those marginals, then you say that that's a solution to the marginal problem. This is just terminology. So as an example, let's say we just have two qubits. And let's say that you give me two different reduced density matrices, rho A1 and rho A2, on these two qubits. So we have rho A1 on one qubit, rho A2 on the other qubit. And then we ask, is there any global pure state, so any state on these two qubits, that has those exact same reduced density matrices? And the answer is not always, but if you've ever thought about this before, it's not too hard to see. The answer ends up being, there is a global pure state with those reduced density matrices, if and only if the two reduced density matrices have the same spectrum. If you haven't seen that before, that's a nice little exercise. So the most general type of marginal problem is where you specify not just the marginals on disjoint regions, but also on overlapping regions. So maybe you say on AB, this is the marginal, and on BC, this is the other marginal. And then you ask if there's a global state ABC that reduces to those two marginals. And in general, this is a super hard problem actually to see whether there's a solution to the marginal problem. It turns out that it's QMA complete, which is a complexity class. But we'll be interested in a regime of this problem where it's actually a lot easier. And in particular, it's easier because we're only asking for approximate solutions to the marginal problem, and because we're going to be looking at really large systems. So it turns out that it's easier to talk about solutions in this regime. And because it's easier, we'll be more ambitious. We'll be asking not just is there a solution, but how many solutions are there? And by how many solutions, what I mean is, what's the largest number of pure orthogonal states you can find such that each state has the given marginals? And it'll generically be the case that there are multiple sets of orthogonal states that all have the same marginals. And the question will be, what's the largest set of mutually orthogonal states we can find? It might not be unique, but we're just going to ask, whatever it is, what's the largest possible number? And before I get into my main results, let me just talk about other people who have thought about related things. So like I mentioned, this quantity, coarse-grained entropy, the way that I defined it here, has been discussed before. And of course, there are other ways to define it too. Tobias Osborne noted an upper bound. So if n is the number of solutions to the marginal problem, he noted that log n is less than the coarse-grained entropy. So like I said, this is a really nice, really simple argument that I'll give you later in the talk. And our job today is to be showing that not only is this an inequality, but it's actually an approximate equality, so that you can truly think of coarse-grained entropy as counting log n. In related but different work, Brandau and Dalzell show that if you specify arbitrary marginals on overlapping regions for a large system, then there is an approximate solution to the marginal problem. And they construct this solution using a matrix product state. And they're not concerned with counting how many solutions because they have very different concerns in their paper. But the point is they managed to show that there's one solution. And our concern here is to count how many solutions there are and relate it back to this coarse-grained entropy. So now I'll talk about the main results and give you some intuition. And then after that, I'll go into a sketch of the proof of these results. By the way, I probably won't be checking for hands up. So if anyone does have a question, feel free to just go for it. Okay, on this slide, I'm going to be giving an exact statement of one of the main results. This is for the special case that you're only concerned with disjoint regions on your lattice. And that's the slightly easier case, but I'll state it first for simplicity. And it goes like this. So first, we take our lattice and we divide it up into our cells A1, A2, et cetera. And then we define this coarse-grained entropy, like I said before. And now to be precise about what this number M is, it's the size of the largest possible set of orthogonal states, pure states, such that their marginals of each state on each subsystem AI matches rho within epsilon in trace distance. So this is the condition that it's an approximate solution of the marginal problem. And again, there could be multiple different sets of states like this, but either way, we're just going to be counting the size of the largest set. And then the main result, like I've been touting, is that the coarse-grained entropy is like log n. Now, there is a caveat there, which is to say that it's like log m plus some subleading corrections. So in what sense do I mean subleading? Well, the coarse-grained entropy is naturally extensive for most systems, like it should be. So if all of the AIs are pure, then the coarse-grained entropy will be zero. But if all of the AIs have some non-zero entropy, then in general, the coarse-grained entropy is proportional to n, the number of systems. It's A1 to AN. So in that sense, it's extensive. And the corrections in this approximate equality are going to be subleading in the sense that they're subextensive. So just to give you a grip on these inequalities, on the left-hand side, we have a root n. So that's subleading in the sense that it is subextensive. Here, on the right-hand side, we do have an n, so it's extensive, but we also have it next to an epsilon. And we're going to be interested in the case that epsilon is small, because remember, epsilon is saying how close of an approximate solution are these marginal solutions. So this is just being precise about the way in which S coarse-grained is approximately log n. So now let me try to give some intuition for the result before I try to sketch any proof of it. So let's just consider the simplest case where each row AI is pure. So then it turns out that the only solution to the marginal problem is that the global state is a pure product state. I guess that's also a good little exercise to work out. Because if you know that if a state has reduced density matrices that are pure on every region, then it just needs to be a tensor product of those pure states. So in this case, the coarse-grained entropy is zero, and m, which is the number of solutions, is one. So that works out perfectly. S is like log n. Now let's go to an example on the other extreme. let's say that each row AI is maximally mixed. So in that case, let's try to look for solutions. Well, any har random psi will give an approximate solution, because you probably know that for a har random state in the Hilbert space, the reduced density matrix looks close to maximally mixed. So any state is an approximate solution. So since most pure states work, you might guess that the number of orthogonal pure solutions is like dim H, the dimension of the Hilbert space. Now, I guess I didn't prove that yet, because saying that most states work doesn't necessarily give you an orthogonal basis of states that works. But regardless, it should be intuitive that you can get dim H many solutions. So in this case, it again matches up because the coarse grain entropy is just going to be n log d, where d is the dimension of, I should have written d equals, dim ai for qubits. So the coarse grain entropy is just n log d. So then we again have log m equals s coarse grained. And of course, the more interesting examples are when you have some intermediate case between these two extremes, or also when you're concerned with matching marginals on overlapping regions, which will be more difficult. Okay, so now let me mention the generalization of this result to the case that you're going to be concerned with marginal solutions on overlapping regions. So it turns out that with some caveats, the coarse grained entropy also counts the number of orthogonal pure states that match the marginals on all regions of some length scale. So now we'll be concerned with not just finding solutions that match here and here and here, but that also match on other choices of regions as well. But before I try to make that statement, let me explain how some of the subtleties work in this more general case. So here's just an example to look at to get a sense of it. Imagine that we have a 1D lattice, and imagine that we break it up into regions like in blue. And then imagine that the state is a bunch of bell pairs between different qubits, and the linked bell pairs I drew in green. So the way that I set it up, each of these blue regions is maximally entangled, so it's maximally mixed. On the other hand, let's say that we shifted the partition, and then we looked at these red regions. So the red regions are not all maximally mixed. For instance, this first red region over here is actually a pure state, while this other red region is maximally mixed. So first of all, this just illustrates that as you shift your partition, the coarse grained entropy can change a lot depending on the partition. And what I'll do to deal with this is that we'll define a version of the coarse grained entropy at some fixed scale. So we choose a scale that I'll call L prime. And then we're going to minimize the coarse grained entropy over all partitions into regions of size L prime. So we're looking not just at the blue partition, but also the red partition and so on, and then minimizing over that. And then when we count the marginals, when we count these solutions to the marginal problem, what we'll need to do is count the number of pure states that match the marginals of the reference state on all scales below some smaller scale L. So I was just setting up the picture for you, but to be more precise, here's how the statement goes for the case of overlapping marginals. So again, we're going to have these two scales, L and L prime. And there's a lot of text here, but let's focus first on this formula in green. So this is saying that on the right-hand side, we have the coarse grained entropy at length scale L. So that means minimize over all partitions of length L. On the left-hand side, we have the same thing, but for L prime. And then in the middle, we have log ML, where ML is the number of solutions to the marginal problem or I'll just say it's the number of orthogonal pure states that match rho on every region below length scale L. Okay, so all of these length scales are a lot to take in, and it's probably hard to follow directly as I say it. So let me give you the takeaway message, which is that, remember on those first couple slides, I said that the coarse-grained entropy is often insensitive to exactly where you choose the partition. Now, in the example I just gave you, we saw that it was sensitive, but in, say, a thermalizing pure state that doesn't have this sort of fine-tuned entanglement structure, then the coarse-grained entropy will be less sensitive to the partition. And in that case, that the coarse-grained entropy at different length scales will be similar. And then we have an approximate equality between log ML and the coarse-grained entropy. So the takeaway message here is that in nice examples where the coarse-grained entropy doesn't vary that much with length scale, then you can again have it bound the number of solutions to the marginal problem on overlapping regions. Great. So I'm going to drop that discussion of the overlapping regions for now, because I think it can be a bit confusing. And I'll just focus on the proof sketch for the case of these non-overlapping marginals. So let's start with the upper bound. This was the case proven by Osborne, but I'll present his argument because it is only one line, and I think it's really nice. So just to put the statement in front of you again, we're going to show that log M is less than the coarse-grained entropy. And we're in this very simple setup right now where you've just divided the lattice into different regions, A1, A2, et cetera. Okay, so how do we prove this upper bound? Well, the trick is that assume that there exist m different solutions to the marginal problem. Now take their average like this, their mixture. And because they're solutions to the marginal problem, then the marginal of each phi should match rho. And then when I take their average, of course, it will also match rho. So this state sigma has the same marginals as rho. And then we do this one line computation where we say, what's the log of the number of solutions? Well, by design, this is just S of sigma, because sigma is a uniform mixture of m different states. So its entropy is log m. And then the subadditivity of entropy, which I mentioned earlier in the talk in response to a question, this is also sort of like the positivity of mutual information, gives you this inequality. And then finally, as we noted, the marginals of sigma and rho are the same. So that's actually just the coarse-grained entropy of rho. So there's the one-line proof of this upper bound. Okay, again, feel free to ask any questions here, but if not, I'll move along. Okay, so now let's talk about the lower bound. And the lower bound, again, I'll just restate it here for convenience. So it's going to say that once we define our coarse-grained entropy, that tells us that there are at least m orthogonal states that have the same marginals as rho, and that we know that m can be at least this big. So that's the statement. We want to show that there are enough solutions. So to prove something like this, it's going to be constructive. We want to construct as many possible solutions to the marginal problem as we can. And before I go into the proof sketch, let me just mention that from the perspective of our motivation at the beginning of the talk, it would be nice if these solutions to the marginal problem were low complexity in the sense of quantum circuit complexity, say. And the reason it would be nice that if they're low complexity is that I was trying to give this microstate interpretation to coarse-grained entropy. And the setup that you might imagine is, you know, again, you have a system in the lab and it's in some state and you don't know, you only have access to the local, to a local observables of this system, say. So for all you know, it could be in one of these many other microstates. But remember that the Hilbert space is huge, as they say, and a random state in the Hilbert space is some super high complexity state. And in fact, most states are so high complexity that you would never reach them under an ordinary amount of time evolution in the lab. As they say, if you evolve a system in your lab for 10 minutes, there's no way that you're going to reach the huge exponential number of states that are in the Hilbert space. So if these states that we're constructing phi are to be all like toy models of the actual unknown microstates of your system, then it would be great if they weren't super complex random states, because those states are not really good candidates for possible states of your system. So this is sort of just an aesthetic consideration for this theorem, but I purposely proved this in a way such that the states we construct are in fact low complexity. Okay, and now I'll give a proof sketch. So this is the simplest possible case of the theorem that we're going to prove, where we're going to take each A1 to AN to be single qubits. So I was drawing them as regions before, but imagine they're actually just qubits. And then we're going to take each marginal on each qubit to be the same, this P100 plus P211. And let's see if we can prove the theorem in this simple instance. So our goal is to construct M different states with those marginals. And the coarse-grained entropy is just going to be N times the entropy of rho A. And the entropy of rho A is just going to be the entropy of this classical probability distribution P1 comma P2. Now, this is a technique that I'm about to go through that'll be pretty familiar to you if you are an information theorist of any sort. So define the set T of product states that consist of binary strings, where each binary string has about P1 zeros and about P2 different ones. So that's not all the binary strings, but it's a lot of them. And a classic computation in information theory would tell you that the number of such states is like 2 to the n times the entropy of the distribution P1, P2. And you could arrive at that by just doing some combinatorics and Stirling's formula. So, okay, what are we going to do with this? Well, note that T, this set T, it has the right number of states to be our candidate solutions to the marginal problem, because it has 2 to the ns states where that's exactly equal to 2 to the coarse-grained entropy. So the size of this set is good, but the individual states in this set are not solutions to the marginal problem for the simple reason that they're product states. And the marginals of these product states are just going to literally be product states, and they won't be the desired marginals rho AI. So we sort of have the right states, but what we're going to do is form random linear combinations of them. And we're going to randomly choose k different states from T, and we'll end up taking k like log n. And then we form this state, which is the uniform mixture. And the uniform mixture of k random product states from this set T is going to have marginals close to rho AI with some sampling error, like 1 over root k. Because it's sort of just like you're sampling a random variable from a distribution, and then the expected deviation from the mean will end up being like 1 over root k. Okay, so this state that I boxed in red, that has the right marginals, but it's not pure because it's some mixed state. And we wanted pure solutions to the marginal problem. So instead of taking the mixture, let's try taking the coherent superposition. Now, the trick is that the coherent superposition will actually have the same marginals as the mixture. At least it is highly likely to. Because when you take the partial trace to look at the marginal, the only difference between the partial trace of these two expressions is the cross terms, like psi I, psi j. But these cross terms are going to be zero, which is to say that the states don't interfere, because a psi I and a psi j are just two random binary strings, which are likely orthogonal on half their qubits. So you're unlikely to have these terms interfering. So already we found one approximate solution to the marginal problem, which is just this psi one. Now you're just going to repeat this. You're going to pick k more random states from this set T, making sure that you avoid the ones that we already picked. And you're going to get another solution to the marginal problem by two. And then the brunt of the actual calculation is just showing that you can repeat this process about n many times before you've significantly depleted this supply of states that you're drawing from. So that's the proof sketch for lower bounding the number of marginal solutions. Maybe I'll just say the reason that you can do this about this many times before you deplete T is that K was only log n sized. So we're not depleting this set of states very much every time. And then up to little o of n, you get this many iterations available to you. Great. So,
so where did you use k being log n?
Sure. So I didn't. Great. I didn't say yet, but I'll say why we want k to be log n. So we don't want to choose k too big, because then we'll use up too many states, and eventually we'll run out of states in T. But we also don't want k too small, because we're getting this error like 1 over root k, this sampling error. So to explain where the log n in particular comes from, when I said that there's this sampling error, that's actually the error of each marginal separately. So each marginal is, let me think a second how to best explain. The quick answer in some sense is that it comes from using Chernoff-Hofting inequality, but let me find the better words for that. So we're doing this randomized construction where we randomly chose k states. And now let's ask the probability of an error on row A1, or probability of error epsilon on row A1. By error, I mean that these k states, that their marginal doesn't quite match the marginal row A1 that we want. So because of this random process and the central limit theorem, it ends up looking roughly like a Gaussian for the probability of the error epsilon. Or I guess the error can't be negative, but like a Gaussian, the random variable corresponding to the square of a Gaussian. So the width of this is like 1 over square root k, but it's very quickly exponentially dying off. So if you just use slightly more than Yeah, I don't think I'll have a good explanation that's short, except to say that the log is associated with the exponential decay of this error in the Gaussian.
Yeah, I think I got the point. Thanks.
Yep. Great.
I had a doubt. Is the size of set T exactly that 2 to the entropy or approximately so?
Let me just tell you the math fact. So I guess T, I wasn't that precise. I said it had approximately P1 zeros and approximately P2 ones. But let's say that it has... that should have been like a P1N zeros and a P2N ones. So by approximately, let's say that we really mean that the number of zeros is P1N plus or minus delta N for some delta. So then the size of T ends up being 2 to the S times N plus or minus delta N. I think that's correct.
I see.
By the way, this is the asymptotic equipartition property, it's called in classic information theory. And because the systems that I'm ultimately wanting to prove these results about are not translation invariant, this is a very general result for any system, then the variables are not going to be IID, they're not going to be identical when you, in the application of this so-called asymptotic equipartition principle. So you need to use a non-IID version of the asymptotic equipartition property, which I proved some simple version of it. I think there's probably plenty of versions in the literature, but the note is just that if you ever want to do this sort of information theory for non-identical variables, then that will go through as well.
I see. Yeah, that makes sense. But this is obtained by sort of approximating using Stirling, right? It's not the exact...
That's right. So that's where this plus or minus comes from. Right. I'm saying loosely it's within there. That's right.
Okay, thank you.
So I'm not going to talk about much of how to prove the case for the overlapping marginals, but I'll say something very brief about it, which is that, remember, our task here is to find solutions, to find orthogonal pure states that match rho on all regions of some length scale. So now we don't just want it to match on this region and this region and this region and this region, but we also want it to match on any other region of size L. So to do this is a little bit harder. And the basic way you do it is you start with the result that I already sketched. You start by fixing a partition, and then you generate all of the pure states that you can that have the right marginals on that fixed partition. And then you say, okay, let's just start fresh, but with a shifted partition, slightly shifted by one site. And then you say, let's generate all of the pure states we can that have the right marginals on that partition. And then you keep doing this until you've done this for every different partition. And then you take the results from all of these different shifted partitions, you combine those in random linear combinations, and then when you work it out, you'll find that you'll again have approximately enough states to match the coarse-grained entropy. So that's very loosely speaking how it goes. Okay, let's take a step back from the formulas and let me just summarize again what happened. So We started with this very common proxy for thermodynamic entropy in quantum many-body systems, the coarse-grained entropy, where we just took a lattice, we divided it up, and then we added up the von Neumann entropies. But the question was, what microstates is this counting? Because when you first write down this formula, it's totally unclear. But it turns out it's counting the number of orthogonal pure states with the same reduced density matrices as your original state. And you can show that to varying levels of precision, depending on how you slightly change the parameters of this problem. So now let me start getting into some open questions. Well, this whole business, I was dealing with approximate solutions to the quantum marginal problem, which was to say, these so-called microstates, they only had approximately the same local properties. But I have a sort of sketchy analytical argument that you can actually find roughly the same number of exact solutions. In particular, I think that there's a way to take the approximate solutions and sort of deform them into exact solutions. So I didn't fully prove that, but I'm pretty optimistic. And there's also, I have numerical support that that's true. So there's some constructive way of generating these states on a computer for a spin chain and checking that this conjecture is true. Then you might also ask, I mentioned before that aesthetically, I was interested in making sure that the quantum marginal problem solutions were not super high complexity, because I didn't want them to be totally random states in the Hilbert space that you need to form. I wanted them to be sort of simple, plausible microstates in some toy sense. So the complexity of the states I actually built in the sort of constructions I just went over, they were polynomial complexity in the system size. You might wonder whether you can even get order one complexity solutions to the marginal problem. Now, Brandeis and Dahl.
Daniel, can I ask? So, yes. Is it polynomial complexity because it's k is log n, or?
That's right.
Okay, I see. Okay.
In fact, I think the states are literally just log n complexity, so much less than polynomial. If allowed to use non-local gates, which.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Oh, I see. But anyway, so you already constructed relatively low complexity.
Yeah, that's right. I guess if you're interested in geometrically local gates, which is maybe the more natural notion for what we're talking about, then they're like n log n, I guess. But anyway, you might wonder about order one complexity, because Brandeis and Dalzell, as a corollary of one of their constructions, they show these approximate solutions to the marginal problem they show one solution that has order one complexity. And in fact, it's not just order one complexity, it's an MPS, I guess. Well, order one complexity and MPS is the same in 1D. And you might ask, can you actually get e to the coarse grained entropy many solutions, just like we do in my setting? Okay, and one more concrete open question to ask is that there's this alternative definition of coarse-grained entropy that's often used, for instance, in the holography literature or elsewhere, that uses some max entropy formulation. If anyone's interested, I have a slide later. I could show you exactly what that is. And a natural question is to ask whether the microstate counting that I've talked about also applies to this max entropy formulation. Kelly and Wall, or Wall, Engelhart, are examples in the holography literature where they talk about this max entropy formulation. Okay, so those were some very concrete open questions. Let me now talk about some more open-ended ones. So first of all, let me just note in passing this conjecture, this connection to the quantum PCP conjecture. So if you aren't familiar, the PCP conjecture is about how hard it is to approximately solve QMA problems in some sense. So for instance, the local Hamiltonian problem is about finding ground states of local Hamiltonians. And we know that that's hard. Sorry, it's about finding the energy of the ground state of a local Hamiltonian. And we know that that's hard, but it's conjectured that it's also hard to even approximately find the ground state energy of a local Hamiltonian. So that's the PCP conjecture. How does it have anything to do with what we're talking about now? Well, like I mentioned before, the problem of finding marginals is a QMA complete problem. And it turns out that the problem of finding approximate solutions to the marginal problem is plausibly related to the quantum PCP conjecture. And in some, what we've seen here is that in some regime, it's very easy to find approximate solutions to the marginal problem, which is related to the regimes in which the quantum PCP conjecture would apply or not in some sense, or rather, it's related to what examples you'll be able, you should use to prove the quantum PCP conjecture or not. So I won't go more into that, but if you've ever heard of this conjecture before, then maybe some of that is will be sensible. Okay, another totally natural question to ask is, what are the dynamics of this coarse grained entropy? Because the motivation of this talk, I was talking about the second law of thermodynamics and how classically the entropy increases, and then we define this analog. And I've given a microstate interpretation to the analog, but I never talked about, you know, about the dynamics of this. And in classical physics, one of the reasons that you think entropy increases is because you think, okay, the microstate is going to travel to other microstates that have more microstates in their macrostate. Or in other words, it's going to adopt coarse grain properties that are more likely in the sense that there are more microstates to go to with those coarse grain properties. So that's a sort of statistical intuition for why entropy increases. And you might wonder if you can take this microstate interpretation in the quantum case and apply it to get some better intuition for why quantum mechanically this coarse grain entropy should be increasing. Okay, and finally, let me just mention one other interest of mine related to the quantum marginal problem, which is you might wonder about the space of consistent marginals. So what is the space of all different possible k-body marginals on a system that are consistent? And to specify all the k-body RDMs of an n-body system, you might have thought that that takes k to the n pieces of data to describe, just because there is k to the n different k-body reduced density matrices. So to just list them all out in some uncompressed form would take k to the n bits. On the other hand, it turns out that I could explain that there's this sort of surprising compression where information theoretically you can show it only takes kn log n bits to give some compressed version of the list of all k-body RDMs on an n-body system. So the fact that the correlations are somehow constrained or compressible in this way suggests that there's some better data structure, some better way of thinking about the set of k-body RDMs of your many-body state. And that's something that I'm super interested in because I think it could be a promising route to thinking about ways to simulate quantum many-body systems better. Because if there's a much more efficient way to capture their local correlations, then that might lead to a good representation of the state as you simulate it. So that's just some speculation that I wanted to share with you because I think it's interesting if anyone wants to think about that problem. Okay, so thanks to Michael Walter, especially, who I discussed some aspects of the marginal problem with, and to Jeff for some discussions on holographic aspects of coarse grain entropies. And thanks so much for listening and for having me today. And now I'll take any questions.
Okay, thanks Daniel for wonderful talk. So let's thank Daniel. So any questions? If you have questions, just speak up.
Hi. Thanks for the nice talk. In the start, you were talking about these thermal states, right? But then you focused on this problem of counting the number of pure orthogonal states. Does that somehow connect to thermal states? As in, like, can you learn something about the Hamiltonian, say? if you know that this set of orthogonal pure states can give you consistent marginals, can you learn something about the Hamiltonian?
Do you mean like the Hamiltonian governing your system?
Yeah. It's just this sort of...
Yeah, I don't know if I have a great answer to that, but... I mean, if you have your many body system and it's in a pure state, and then you run it for a long time, and the system thermalizes, even though the global state is still pure, then what this coarse grained entropy, it'll have some extensive coarse grained entropy. And what that's telling you is it's counting how many other pure states would also look thermal. And therefore, it's sort of naturally related to the entropy of the Gibbs state of the Hamiltonian. But I'm not sure what to say about what it tells you about the Hamiltonian per se, although it's an interesting question.
Nice. Thank you.
Anyone with a, I guess I should call on people. Tarun, you had a question?
Thank you so much. Very interesting talk. I'm trying to reconcile your result with my understanding of, consider topologically ordered phases. So here, at least the intuition is that if I give you all marginals of the ground state, then the right answer for how many states match that marginal, I would think it just a ground state degeneracy on a torus, right? Suppose I put it as
great question.
States which, but if I look at this bound where I start calculating S of AI, some or all I, that's much larger than some order one number. It scales with it has parameter law. So, yep. And my resolution was that you are using because of this low complexity constraint. Is that the answer that you're? Because those states are, the topologically ordered states are not low complexity. So there does not exist any state phi which matches the marginal. If phi was low complexity, by definition, it cannot represent topologically ordered phase whose complexity is order at least some. Is that the resolution of this tension or maybe there's no tension?
Great question. So the tension is very real. So I'll just restate it. So gapped ground states of local Hamiltonians, topologically ordered or not, or really any state that satisfies one of these so-called TQO conditions, it has the property that basically the topological quantum order condition itself, another way of framing it, is that there's only one solution to the local marginal problem. Any state that has those marginals on a sphere would need to be that unique ground state. So how does that square with this fact that I'm purporting to construct many solutions to the marginal problem? And the answer is that I'm writing this approximate equality, maybe that's misleading. I tried to caveat that the actual corrections in the inequalities I give are subleading in N, but that means that these inequalities are only non-trivial when the entropy is extensive. And because these states are area law, then you're not going to actually get non-trivial inequalities when you plug in the numbers. But that is a great question.
Mm-hmm. Because I thought maybe you can take epsilon. Earlier you had mentioning epsilon can be chosen in a way so that you cancel out the extensive part of this, but you're saying that can't be done.
Let me see for a second.
Because if epsilon is 1 over n squared, then it is no longer extensive.
The upper bound, so on the right-hand side, that's right, it's no longer extensive.
On the other side, if I could take epsilon to be exponentially small, and then let's say e to the power minus some, is it true?
That's right. So if you took epsilon really small, then actually, here, let me think 1 second.
You want n log epsilon to be vanishing, right? So yeah, so epsilon is, let's say, e to the power minus 1 over n squared or something like that. But maybe this is a very, I don't know, maybe we are getting
into it. No, it's a perfect question, and it's possible that when I transferred my formula from my draft to this PowerPoint slide, I like left out one of the conditions on epsilon not being exponentially small or something. But that is a great point that you need to check that it's compatible with that.
Right, right. Can I say one more comment before I just about a dynamics question? Isn't it true that just the usual intuition just goes through that we know that how SAI behaves as a function of time for chaotic system. It just grows linearly with time. So, and it matches with all the words you said were correct. And the classical context of where you mentioned it grows, it's the same thing here in the sense that initially you are spanning some, let's say, product-like states. If the initial state is product, then it's M is order one. And finally,
yeah.
And it increases. So I don't know. Isn't that the kind of the right way to think about it, or is there more to it?
Great. So, okay, you're right that we roughly understand, sort of empirically speaking, or in toy models, what the dynamics of the coarse grained entropy is, because of course it's well studied how the von Neumann entropy of regions increases in time, but I guess what I was suggesting is that if you wanted a sort of conceptual explanation for why it's increasing, I mean, there already are proposals, you know, you talk about the quasi-particle picture of the entanglement increasing.
I mean, the conceptual picture is exactly what you, based on your work, is matches with your work, that initially there are very few states which approximate, which look like that. And later on, there are e to the power s number of states which locally look same. So it matches with your even.
I see. You're great. So on the face of it, it sort of matches nicely. There's this sort of wrinkle that how should I say it? If you try to be a little bit more quantitative, at least for me. Mm-hmm. There's ends up being this point of disanalogy where it's unclear whether you should be counting volumes of Hilbert space, like in Haar measure, versus whether you should be counting numbers of orthogonal states. And it sort of seems like to make, for the sort of dynamical argument, it feels more natural to count Haar measure volumes of subsets of Hilbert space, whereas what I was counting was orthogonal sets of states. And the counting for those two different things actually varies by an exponential factor. So I have a little bit of confusion fleshing out the analogy, but I agree that on the face of it, it sort of seems like it should work.
Okay. Thank you. Very nice talk. Thank you.
Lucin, did you have a question?
So very, very interesting talk. So actually sort of few basic questions. So the sort of setup is you imagine you have this coarse graining because you're coarse graining over different regions and in some sense looking at each of them separately and that sort of motivates this idea of coarse graining. If you were to actually look at sort of correlated quantities between those regions, so if, when you make measurements you take probabilities that are correlated between those measurements, then even though you've restricted yourself to making measurements in each of those regions, you can nevertheless get all the information about the state in a sort of, you know, this is tomographic locality. Does that means you're sort of not imagining that kind of perspective? You're imagining measuring quantities that are not correlations in some sense. Is that, do you have a perspective?
Yeah, that's a great point. So when I say that these microstates, so when I gave that interpretation and I said, if you're in the lab and you only have access to local observables, for all you know, it could be one of those microstates. I mean, in a sense, that's not true. If you measured all the local observables and all of their correlations, then you would know the full microstate. And yeah, I guess because that would yield a sort of trivial answer for the coarse grained entropy, it would just give you zero. You know, there's only one state that matches all of the correlations. I guess you're just sort of pointing out that like a key feature of this throwing away of information is that we're throwing away correlations, and that's right.
Yeah, so that's okay. So then I had a few questions which I think follow on from that. So you said at one point that under natural time evolution, your entropy measure increases. And I just wondered, what are unnatural cases? What does that statement mean?
Oh, so I just meant in the systems that you study in condensed matter, in which you're able to calculate this quantity, and you start with what a theorist would consider a sort of sane initial condition, then we see that it increases. Of course, you could rig it so that it decreases.
And do you have examples of states where it actually decreases? What kind of properties do they have?
I guess the only example that comes to mind is when you choose like a time reverse state that's going to evolve backwards in time from a high entropy to a low entropy state. And I guess that's the sort of same strange example you get classically as well. Other than that, it's a good question. I don't know.
Okay. And then, okay. So good. And then, this is sort of similar to the correlations across space, but also across time, there are correlations. So then the question is, if you make observations over time, even if you don't look at spatial correlations, then you'll get extra information about the mm-hmm. state. So is it going to be the case that the entropy will increase more quickly for some states than others, or more generally, can you discriminate, for example, a pure global state from a mixed global state in that kind of situation? What can you learn about evolution over time in this context?
I haven't thought about that at all, but that seems like that's an interesting direction. I've thought about which observable you can use different sets of observables to define your coarse grained entropy, but I've never considered putting those observables at different times. So I don't know.
Okay, all right. Thanks.
Tim, I think, had a question.
Hey, Daniel. Nice talk. So I had a question about this PCP conjecture. If you have like a system that satisfies this NLTS conjecture, this like no low-lying trivial states, then doesn't that contradict what you were saying, that these, you know, global pure states should have low complexity if they want to mimic locally, you know, the true grand state?
I think, again, because the ground state is area law, then mm-hmm. my results I'm presenting aren't going to give you non-trivial bounds on them. But so like I'm constructing some solutions to the I'm constructing some low complexity states that look the same locally as the original state,
mm-hmm.
but I'm constructing some number of them that I'm lower bounding using the coarse grained entropy. And because of the error terms and those inequalities, I think it's sort of similar to the answer to Turin's question. That basically the results I'm showing are just not that interesting in the regime that you have an area law state.
Wait, sorry, but I'm a little confused by that, right? Because if you
maybe
take like the simpler analog of Torque code or topological, or just like a GHZ state, right? It's area mm-hmm. law, but each local subsystem is maximally mixed, right? So I think there the coarse grained entropy is extensive, right?
Oh, that's if if you're yeah, exactly. If the regions are single qubits, otherwise,
sure.
Yeah. And then go on. So,
well, I mean, even if they're slightly bigger, in the case of GHZ, they're all maximally mixed, right?
Oh, I mean,
not maximally mixed. It wouldn't be maximally mixed, but
they have one bit of entropy, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Right.
Yeah, let me.
But regarding the GHZ or topological order, I don't see any contradiction with your results. I mean, I think I think those are consistent, right?
Yeah, of course it's consistent. Okay, mm-hmm. So say again, what did you want to say about NLTS? So add an example of an NLTS state.
Yeah, then, you know, like all states with low enough energy density have high complexity, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so then locally, yeah, presumably if it has good enough energy, then the distance to the local density matrix is small enough, right?
So I think the answer is that what this is basically showing, and I think that Aram Harrow and Fernando Brandão have effectively made an observation like this in some of their past papers. Mm-hmm. It's basically showing that if you want to have an NLTS Hamiltonian and you specify the error in the NLTS sufficiently loosely to be similar to the error tolerances that I'm using here, then you couldn't use a geometrically local Hamiltonian to do it. Because if you could, then you would get the sort of contradiction that you're suggesting. So that line of thought makes sense. And in this paper called Product State Approximations by Aram and Fernando, they pursue that line of thought.
Okay, I see.
So that's why to find these Hamiltonians, you wouldn't want them on a planar graph or something if you're going to use the sort of error tolerances that we're using in these results. I should also mention the results that I'm presenting to you today. It's an idea that I had a while ago, but I only sort of fleshed out the details and proved everything in the past like week or so. So I haven't had a huge amount of time to mull over all the consequences yet. So I'm glad that people are bringing up all these cases, and I got to think about them still.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
So I had a sort of unrelated question perhaps. So I guess like we know that the Gibbs state minimizes the sum of the average energy plus the entropy term.
Yep.
Suppose in that case, you replace the entropy with this coarse grain entropy and do some kind of minimization. Is there any way to like bound how close that state would be to the true Gibbs state? Is there any way to do something like that?
I've thought about a very related problem, but basically I don't know the answer. So I think a problem that's super related is I mentioned this max entropy definition of the coarse grain entropy, where you look at the entropy, the maximum possible entropy of a state that's consistent with some local observables.
Uh-huh.
And if the local observables you choose are, say, the Hamiltonian, then this is the Gibbs state. And basically taking the same setup and then applying the microstate counting to it is something that I only just started thinking about today, so I'm not sure yet.
So we put out this like somewhat big paper on approximating the quantum free energy, which uses very related ideas. There you like, okay, we want to compute this free energy, which is like a minimization of the free energy functional, but you do an optimization over like sets of consistent marginals. So that's really the, so, and that's the, that's, so similar techniques show up there. So you do a set of the minimization of these marginals and you get a set of marginals. And then at the end, there's something called a rounding step, which takes these marginals and patches them up to get a global state. And you can show that this gives you an approximation to the free energy. And we again use some of these techniques from Brando, Harrell, and these things called like SDP hierarchies.
Pretty
interesting talk.
I should read that. Thank you. Thank you for.
Yeah, I might email you later because I might have some follow-up questions. So you should chat. Thanks again. It was a really nice talk.
I think Tim had a question again, maybe, or maybe the hand is just still up.
Yeah, sorry. Just forgot to lower.
Yeah.
Okay, I think Penny's left, but do we have any further questions for Daniel? Okay, if not, let's thank Penny once again for a really nice talk.